Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here, and after navigating Cambie Bridge construction, just sitting down right in time for the show to start, my co-host Thomas Drantz here as well. Of course, Drantz also covers the team for The Athletic. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Drantz, what's going on?
I think I owe an apology to Rick Dhaliwal for how much difficulty I had navigating the Cambie Street Bridge as a pedestrian. I'd forgotten that it was shut down.
Yeah, usually one side is
quick,
shut down.
Yeah, yeah, usually it's a quick, like, 10-minute, 15-minute jaunt to the studio. More like half an hour for me as I tried to figure out exactly where I could get on. Jaywalked a little bit. Unsettled is the word ringing around my skull.
An unsettled media availability.
I thought this team enters the offseason feeling extraordinarily unsettled.
So do we want to do this in whiteboard format to start the show here?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's just go right to the whiteboard then.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, April 18th. And, of course, the headline is the Canucks speak.
I want to stop you.
Okay.
Because I actually think there's a headline that we have to start with.
All right.
The headline that we have to start with is Rick Tocchet speaks independent
first.
Of management. Yep. Now, look, I don't have insight into exactly what's happened across this week. I can tell you that when the Canucks in the past have had disappointing seasons, often the final week of the regular season has been spent with hockey operations leadership and ownership and high-level meetings charting a course forward. And this organization across the last 15-plus years, 20 years, under this ownership group, has liked to have things settled, right, and tucked away before explaining themselves to the fan base, to the market, to the media. Now, a good example of this, to bring it back to it, is, for example, when the COVID year went so terribly. I'm talking about the 2021 bubble season, where the yep. Canucks finished seventh in the All-Canadian Division.
The North Division season, yep.
And the decision was made to retain both Jim Benning and Travis Green, which was deeply unpopular in the market, right? What did the organization do? They at least brought in the Twins. You know what I'm saying? And that was tucked away, done. By the time that sort of we got to the point of facing the media and sort of looking forward to what this was going to look like. Travis Green wasn't extended, although it was clear that he was going to be. But at least there was like something new, something fresh in terms of an organizational direction. We don't know if the Canucks decided to try and like redouble their efforts to get Rick Tocchet done this week. Although certainly some reports, John Shannon, Rick Dhaliwal this morning on Halford and Brough would
Jason Brough earlier this week
would point in that direction.
Yep.
Okay. I don't know that though. So I want to be clear. I'm passing along what I'm hearing from media, not what I'm hearing from my sources. But the fact that Rick Tocchet went first before the players, before management, is always, you have to sometimes break things down into the fundamental meaning. If there are questions about a coach's status, and frankly, if there's questions about like a general manager's status, right? And that person, that organizational leader speaks at the end of the year, is up on the dais without their direct boss, their direct superiors, that tends to be a bad sign. When Kyle Dubas spoke without Brendan Shanahan a couple years back and then was fired a few days later, that was a bad sign, right? This is, to me, it doesn't close the door one way or the other, but it's something that's notable that has to be remarked on. It is a sign that this might be a longer process and a more open question than we suspected it might be going into.
Well, and I'll throw another part of this at you. The fact that he spoke today, now we hear management's going to speak on Monday morning, 10 a.m. You could have done even separately, like even if it was going to be separately, you could have done Tocchet and then management on Monday.
Right.
Right. So the that and I feel like
suggests he's leaving town.
If you felt like you were close on a deal,
yes.
You know what I mean? Hey, Tocchet, don't speak today. Let's see if we can hammer something out over the weekend.
And stick around. Don't leave town
if
yet.
If we can't, you can still go separately. But if we do, then we can all go up together.
Yep.
So that's an interesting element to me, too, where it suggests that maybe there isn't an imminent agreement. And at some point, we'll run through some clips and we'll play some clips here. But even Tocchet himself, again,
it's
reiterating it's a process. And it doesn't sound like he's at the end point of that process.
No, it certainly did not sound like there was an imminent agreement from Tocchet's perspective based on some of what he went through and took us through in terms of how he's thinking about things. The emotional exhaustion that's going to prevent him from coaching Team Canada. The, you know, like I couldn't give Team Canada my best right now,
mm-hmm.
right? That's loaded. Really went back to the process. I asked him specifically about the checklist and he enumerated some things he wants to see.
Yeah, wants to talk to management, wants to talk to certain players,
yep.
right? Like, there's a lot of stuff he wants to get done. And he also said, like, you know, he understands there's a timeline here. It's in everyone's best interest to expedite the process, but you still have to go through it, and obviously it hasn't happened yet for Rick Tocchet and the Canucks. The process of deciding whether he's going to be the coach of this team next season.
The truth is that the, like, a key organizational leader enters this offseason unsettled, right? And with significant questions surrounding their future. This is not no muss, no fuss, tick the box and move on to the offseason.
Nope.
This is something else. It's not something bad necessarily. It's not something good, but it's trending in a murkier direction than I think, you know, if you'd asked us on Monday, like, what do you want to hear from the Canucks at locker room cleanout day? This would have been...
Have Tocchet done.
This would have not been our ideal scenario that we would have sketched out, for sure. Then let's move down. Okay, headline item two. I mean, it's got to be Elias Pettersson.
Yep.
The body language when Tocchet was first asked about Pettersson, I thought was extremely notable. The commentary on his preparation
mm-hmm.
was extremely notable. Quinn Hughes asked about helping Pettersson train.
Doesn't think there's a role.
I thought that was extremely notable. And then, like, the Pettersson availability, I mean, look, he was peppered consistently. He hung in there. I'll say that. But asked about his shot and skating location by my colleague Harmon Dial at The Athletic, I was pretty surprised by his lack of curiosity about the matter.
No theories. Do you have any theories? And he said, nope, not really. I'm going to work on it, but don't really have any theories.
Now, maybe he's just playing it close to the vest, given that he knew that every question was going to be directed at him. But
And there was another instance of that actually earlier. I believe it was Daniel Wagner of Pasitabulis who asked, basically put out like, hey, you had 102 points. You were on pace for over 100 points until the All-Star game last year. Then we've seen, you know, 12, 13, 14 months of a much lower standard. What's different? And Pettersson, I don't know what you're getting at with that question. And to me, it's like, that's about as simple as it gets.
As simple as it gets. Straightforward.
And so I don't really buy that he didn't get what Wagner was getting at. He just didn't want to answer it. And again, it's, how many times have I said this? Like, more than anything else, I want to hear from the people closest to the situation. And obviously number one on that list is Elias Pettersson himself. What's the deal? What's the story? What are your reasons for why it played out like this?
What's the deal, bro?
Yeah, like, what's the deal?
What's the deal?
And we'll come back to this at some point. I thought Rick Tocchet gave the most thorough accounting of at least his perspective on it from anyone we've heard in the Canucks organization,
yes.
right? Where it's basically this snowball effect that all started with not coming into camp in the right shape. And whether you want to chalk that up to purely a lack of preparation, whether you want to chalk it up to a knee injury, whatever.
Or a combination.
Wasn't in shape to start, was behind the eight ball. Things happened with teammates.
But was that exacerbated by his lack of preparation
Quite
and
possibly.
His poor form?
And then as Tocchet said, he just never got traction. And then all of a sudden, it's a lost season. So at least that's like, okay, there's someone who's laying it out step by step. Here's what I think happened. And if you read it like you can buy into that and say, okay, I get that. I get that how that could all derail a player's season. Now, it doesn't account for the drop-off last year going into the playoffs. There's still some questions you're going to have. How much is the preparation going to be different this year? There's still things to ask around that. But at least it's a coherent story that provides a full accounting for what happened, or very close to a full accounting for what happened. And the discrepancy between that from Rick Tocchet and what we got from Elias Pettersson, which was, I don't know what you're getting at, and I don't have any theories for why I'm skating slower and shooting slower. Like, that's a massive discrepancy. And I'm going to go off on a little bit of a rant here, sorry. But Rick Tocchet, just, what, half an hour before Elias Pettersson was on the podium, spoke about, yeah, he's a shy kid, but he's got a letter on his jersey, and I want to see him do more as a leader as well. I want to see him grow in that way. And Pettersson doesn't have to give us a full blow-by-blow of, hey, here's exactly what I was dealing with in the summer. But I do think he owes fans in this market. Like, I'm trying to take off my media hat here and imagine if I was just a fan. If I was a fan watching this who's deeply invested in the Canucks, maybe I've been really, you know, a big Elias Pettersson fan throughout his career, I still think I would want to hear just, like, what happened? A little bit of what happened. And it's not even about, like, castigating himself or taking accountability or anything like that. It's just
not the performative anger thing.
Just tell us a little bit about what happened. Even as simple, like, as frustrating as it gets for some people that he keeps referencing the tendonitis and the knee injury, Harmon's question, hey, what's going on with your skating speed and your shot speed? Well, I think my injuries played a big role in that, not being able to come into camp in the shape I wanted. Okay, at least that's an answer. Whether you find that a satisfactory answer or not, at least it's something. You want us to believe you haven't thought about it? You don't have any theories for why that's disappeared?
When Tocchet was talking about the letter on his sweater, he also used another string of words. Inspire your teammates. Right? That was another sort of framing. Mm-hmm. What does a leader in the NHL do? They drag guys into the fight. They inspire their teammates, right? And if there's this lack of preparation and underperformance, and a guy who's struggling, frankly, with the pressure and public-facing elements of the job, which was true for Pettersson throughout this year, that's a tough spot to be. It's tough to count on that. Like, how do you count on that? So that's a big unsettling factor hanging over the Canucks. There's the Quinn Hughes thing, which he addressed a little bit today. It's not really about making me happy, but everyone wants to win. So I thought he diplomatically handled it. I thought Hughes seemed to be pretty under the weather. Like, he seemed under the weather legitimately. Okay. I don't know if that came through on video or on audio, but he sounded sick a little bit. So I don't know how much I'm taking. Like, I'm not going to read too much into Quinn Hughes' commentary today, in part because I just don't think he felt well. Demko. So there you go. We've got the three unsettled things. What can this organization expect out of Pettersson? We don't know. Mm-hmm. Will Rick Tocchet remain the head coach of the Canucks? We don't know. Quinn Hughes' future and commitment to this organization, it's there for at least another year, but he wants to win. And ultimately, that's going to be another unsettling anvil hanging over the heads of this organization as we go through the summer. Then we get to sort of the subheaders, right? Because I think those are the big ones. Thatcher Demko. I'd like to get an extension done and stay here.
I've always wanted to stay here. I want to be back.
And that's something my agent and Patrick will start talking about. I'll let them focus on that. I'm focused on getting myself back to where I know I can be. How do you value a possible extension? How do you weight the risk on Demko? Like, and not, this is not me saying anything critical of the player. It's just that the range of outcomes might be wider for this single player than maybe any in the entire NHL, right? There is a world where he is literally the most valuable single player, individual contributor on any team in the NHL next season. And there is a world where he plays 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea how you price in that risk in terms of entering extension talks. Like, I just have no idea. I have no clue what that looks like. To me, that's an unsettling prospect. Connor Garland, demurred sort of when asked about his next contract, I would say. Like, he wasn't non-committal, but he suggested that not front of mind for him. Brock Besser seemed reflective of his time in Vancouver, described this as home for him, regardless of what comes next.
Talked about the relationships he's formed, the growing up he's done, you know, said, hey, I've got a girlfriend from here, so I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back one way or another, no matter what happens.
Yeah, and look, don't underrate that as a factor, man. Don't underrate that as a factor.
It's true.
Like you have a local girlfriend. Any player with a local girlfriend, never close the door on them just remaining in the city. We all know how important our partner's happiness is in shaping our own decisions in life, right?
Yep.
We can all relate to that. If this is it, Besser said, I'm sure I'll be back a lot. This will always be home for me. Not shutting the door on this one, although the unique dynamics of this being perhaps the best market to sell your services as a UFA, right? In 15 years, maybe 20 years, maybe since the imposition of the hard cap. I would think, well, certainly since the summer that Louis Erickson and Milan Lucic and
the 2016 free agent.
Who else was it? There was
Andrew Ladd.
Andrew Ladd.
Kyle Okposo,
that was the name.
There was some other
for.
Ones, I think, too. But yeah.
Yeah, that was a good summer to be an unrestricted free agent. This is definitely the best summer
since James Neal that year, or was that later?
Ooh, you might be right. Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't quite
it's
remember.
It's all right.
Anyway. That's a fascinating dynamic. I thought the door got left open just a little bit there. So we come out of today with far more questions than we had going in, like far more questions than answers. This is an unsettled organization coming off a disappointing season in which a core group, right, that has been knocking on the door, that this market has been waiting to see it click for, right? Like this group, everyone's thought at some point it'll just click, and it just never does consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're entering this season after entering this summer after one of the most disappointing Canucks seasons ever, with massive question marks around this team's highest paid player, massive question marks around the future of this team's best player, massive question marks around the future of this team's head coach, massive questions around the future of this team's starting goaltender. That's where we're at. Canucks management's going to speak Monday. Oh boy, right? At the end of the day, like, oh boy, there are a lot of hot button topics that they're going to have to wade through and try to provide some substance, some clarity to this market.
Not to mention some very significant questions around their most recent first round draft pick. Tom Hollander, that might still be lingering by the time they speak on Monday.
No kidding.
So throw that one onto the pile as well.
I mean, at this point, it would be a surprise if it weren't.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's become a real stalemate.
So I do want to get to that in the broadsheet here in a second. But if I could just distill, because you're using the kind of framework of the number one takeaway is just the unsettled nature of everything. And I think that's a good way of thinking about it. If I could distill it even further, I would say the number one takeaway from today, and this isn't breaking new ground necessarily, but it's just the relationship between Elias Pettersson and the team is still very much in question. That's my number one takeaway from today. And the question of, can they find a way to thrive together? I think if you take a lot of the talk about Rick Tocchet's future and his process, and how many times was he asked about Elias Pettersson, right? A lot of that plays into the idea of a partnership with Elias Pettersson going forward. Obviously, the questions to Pettersson himself, the question to Quinn Hughes about, can you play a role in helping him prepare and have a better summer? The questions to various players about the rift with JT Miller, what happened there, the noise, all of it. So much of it comes back to just this question of, can the Vancouver Canucks and Elias Pettersson thrive together next season and beyond? As Tocchet said, they've got to find a way to meet at the 50-yard line. And that really is the question now going into the summer. And as much as Quinn Hughes' future hangs over everything, again, the Elias Pettersson thing plays a huge role in how likely you think you're going to be able to extend Quinn Hughes and keep his services here. So it's been the question really all year. Even as all these other things were happening, that's been the subtext to so much of it. Can this player and this team find a way to partner together effectively and be Stanley Cup contenders together? And that we did not get. Now, somebody texted in earlier, like, look, talk is cheap. Even if Pettersson said all the right things, he still has to go prove it. That's true. But you still want to hear all the right things. And we did not hear that today. If you were hoping for a massive boost in confidence that these two entities can partner together, I don't think you got that today. And in fact, I think you got a lot more reasons to be skeptical of it. In fact,
you know, my voice lilt a bit.
Yeah.
So I want to come back to that really quickly, because one thing that's going to be interesting about the coverage and conversation over the weekend stemming from today, right? Is depending on how you want to quote Rick Tocchet or Quinn Hughes, for example, right? You could come out of this with Tocchet talked about Petey's preparation yeah. and seemed to be pretty critical of it. And then toward the end said, you know, I still believe that if we give this guy a plan, he's going to do it. Like, I still have a lot of, you know, this is a great player. We still have a lot of faith in him. And then Quinn Hughes, you know, do you have a role in helping Pettersson prepare? No, not really. Like, it's kind of on
and
him.
And we're going to play that in a later segment, too, because it was no, not really. And then it was also like, he said, you get out what you put in.
You get out what you put in. And then
finish
it off.
Everyone's got to train their own way. And then
I've always been a big believer in Petey.
And I'll leave it at that.
So if you really wanted to, if you wanted to cut off sentences in a certain way, you know, the old ellipsis trick, you could come out of it with copy that suggests, like, Tocchet and Hughes back Pettersson.
Votes of confidence.
The truth is that that didn't match the tone in the room at all. And so, you know, I've always been a big believer in Petey.
Mm-hmm.
Of course we're going to help and work together and push each other this summer. That's what we always do. Big difference between that, the tone of those two things. Just is what it is.
Okay, broadsheet, and I alluded to it with one of the other questions hanging over this organization right now, which is the status of Tom Volander, who, of course, his NCAA season is over, still has not signed with the Vancouver Canucks. Rick Dhaliwal on the morning show today with a lengthy update and lengthy thoughts about that situation, and the takeaway is from Rick Dhaliwal, no progress between the Canucks and Tom Volander. Talks are quiet, and he reiterated that it's all about the Schedule A bonuses, and, you know, he threw out some recent comps of either similar or much lesser draft pedigree than Tom Volander, who have gotten higher numbers than what the Canucks are offering. You know, Rick also said, obviously, there's a possibility he could go back to school. Could also go play pro in Sweden. That's a potential avenue for Tom Volander if this doesn't get sorted out. But for a team that has kind of prided itself on the AHL development path, they're obviously a big believer in that. Going back to their Pittsburgh days, right? The Rutherford-Alvin management combo. It's surprising to me that there has been so little urgency in trying to get Volander to the Abbotsford Canucks ASAP, to put him in a position to help that team on a Calder Cup playoff run and use that experience to launch himself into an NHL role, hopefully next season. And that ship hasn't sailed. Abby's still got games on the schedule, and then they'll go into the playoffs.
And they've got like a week of practice before the playoffs. So you've still got time.
So that ship hasn't sailed. So, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe they haven't seen it as like a firm deadline, and they still think that option's on the table if they, you know, get down to brass tacks here in the next week or so. It's just surprising that you, like, I think there's real value to be gained from getting him in your program and getting him with Manny Malhotra and the rest of the Abbotsford Canucks as soon as possible. That doesn't mean you just give him whatever you want, but it's a reason to approach these negotiations with urgency. And from what we're hearing, that just simply hasn't been there from either side so far.
The conversation around this is going to be interesting because the holdup is Schedule A bonuses, as I've been pretty insistent on since, what, last week? It's been a week of this now. It's not really a money issue. You know, like, it's really important to note that this isn't a money issue. We're talking about...
It's like a respect thing, right?
Nah, it's a market value thing. From Volander's side, it's a market value thing.
That's what I mean. You don't want to take less than market value because you're like, well, I'm worth that. And even if it's not life-changing money, it's like, just pay me what I'm worth.
I get it. But here's the thing, man. Like, are you going to finish top 10 in goals at your position? Probably not. Not given that you're not going to get power play time and that you weren't a top end producer in college, right? You know, you're going to earn one or two, maybe the plus minus bonus, maybe the time on ice bonus. But that's what we're looking at here. We're looking at a guy who is an even money bet to hit one of four Schedule A bonuses. Like, this is not even money. It's potential money. It's potential money that from the team's perspective, you're happy to pay if the guy hits it. And it's potential money from the player's perspective in that, you know, you're the type of player that's probably not going to cost us a ton in Schedule A bonuses in your first three NHL seasons. Right. So It's not even real money. It's theoretical money. The Canucks have a way of doing business. They have a way of structuring these ELC deals, right? And they want to stick to it. They do not want to set a precedent. I have no problem, generally speaking, with an organization having a method of doing things, a way of doing things. I actually think it's pretty important, even if I disagree with the application in one case or the other, that you sort of, like, for example, I don't like bridge contracts. I like the way that the Tampa Bay Lightning structured these, like, this understanding with all their guys, from Kucherov to Vasilevsky to Braden Point to Mikhail Sergachev to Anthony Cirelli, where it's like, we win on your second deal, and before it expires, you get extended long-term at fair market value on your third, a year out. Like, we take care of you on the third, you take care of us on the second, and they got everyone to accept it, and it led to a decade of winning in multiple Stanley Cups. Like, I don't like bridge contracts. I love the way they do business, right? So I have no problem with a team. Where this becomes bizarre is it's like, why can't you sell this? This is pretend money. You know what the real money is? Go to Abbotsford now, because we think you can make our team next fall and draw a full year's worth of NHL salary. Why can't you sell this? That's like, this for me is not like an organization cutting corners financially. The money's not significant enough for that. This is a why can't you sell your vision question for me.
Yeah, and it's also just why, like, what's the upside of digging your heels in like this? And I get you say, well, it's part of their precedent, but what's the ultimate benefit from that precedent? You save some money, potentially.
Sure, but I think also it's more about, you know, this organization's been, we've talked about it. They're trying to set up a pathway. They're trying to set up their own pathway. They've got the you come in, your second contract looks like this. They've been doing a paint by numbers developmental path through the organization, attached to their own contracts, attached to their player development. I'm not going to quibble with that effort, because I don't fully, like, I can't see the full picture. I can see sort of the accumulation of evidence pointing in this direction. And for the most part, I've liked a lot of what they've done player development.
I'm just saying, you could bend on the Schedule A bonuses and still adhere to that path. You know what I mean?
You could.
That's the stumbling block for me.
You could, but I don't understand the, like, assumptions on which this is based, but I have no problem with a team attempting attempting to sort this out. Like, more than anything, Jamie, it's just that I don't mind a team deciding. I don't mind the Yankees making everyone shave their beards. I don't mind teams having their own rules, their own way of doing business. You know what I mean? I think it matters. I think team culture is delicate. I think little symbolic things matter in terms of establishing it. You know, I don't feel comfortable from the sidelines sniping in and being like, who cares about Schedule A bonuses? Like, I don't understand the recipe. I don't understand the recipe. So I'm not going to sort of snipe at them over that. But you have to be able to sell it. And you have to be able to sell it when your backs are up against the wall and you need an organizational win. And this is the top drafted Canucks player since Vasily Podkolzin. The top drafted Canucks player in the Alvin Rutherford era. Like, this is a critical piece here.
It absolutely is. And it remains very, very strange that there's been so little progress, and seems like there's little progress on the horizon of all, as I am obligated to say, everything could change with one phone call. Okay, we went long there, but that is the whiteboard for today. We got lots more reaction to Media Availability Day coming up here. You can send your text in as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll read some of those. We'll play some clips next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.